All right, now, I'm Scott, Santa War Radio, all that broadcaster stuff. All right, I got to talk about the TSA. And, it's not so much about the TSA. If you've flown on a plane since September 11th, you know, I don't have to rehearse for you. What's the deal? I guess I would like to point out that the first time I ever rode on a plane in 1982 or whatever that I can remember, they had an x-ray machine for your carry-on bag and a metal detector for you to walk through. It was already like that for a generation, at least. I know for a fact because of the things in my hippocampus and their firing that draw the picture in my head for me, I remember the Robert Mueller Airport and a goddamn metal detector. In fact, there was a space between the metal detector and the x-ray machine, and I squeezed through it because it was a space to squeeze through, and I was a stupid little kid, and so I went to squeeze through the space, and they went, oh, no, like the little kid was smuggling a weapon in. That's how bad it already was, okay? When I was, and I'm old, and I'm 33, and so that was when I was about 4 or 5 or something. Anyway, so that's how it already was. You might remember that none of the hijackers were stopped by the security goons that already existed. The problem was the NSA and the CIA weren't telling the FBI who these guys are and where they what they know about them, and let's go get them. You can have your own argument about why that was. If you really want to know about just what they weren't being told, I highly recommend The Shadow Factory by James Bamford. And anyway, so now we have madness in our airport security. George Bush submitted to the demands of the Democrats. You might remember that he was reluctant, and the Republicans were reluctant to nationalize airport security. They liked the whole fascist construct better, where it's tax money to private companies that get to charge whatever they want, and they get to take their cut. That's more the Republican model. The Democrats insisted that George Bush nationalize security because that would prove that he was serious about security. He went along with that. Same thing as the Office of Homeland Security. That's how it became the Department of Homeland Security. It was in June of 2002 when the media finally asked, well, what did the government know before 9/11? And could they have stopped it? And whatever. They didn't even ask that question for 9 months or something. Then when they finally did, the answer was, well, we need a Department of Homeland Security, not an office of it. And so they went with that. That's what they call crisis on Leviathan working for you there. Every government failure leading to an expansion of the power of those who failed. You know what it's like. The shoes, and you have to take your laptop out of your laptop bag, and can't wear a sweatshirt or a jacket through the thing, sir. You need to remove your jacket, and all the so-called random searching and all that. But here's my real thing that I got to say about this, and this is why I'm glad I have a radio show, because if I didn't have a radio show, this microphone to yell into about this and the knowledge that there's somebody's ears out there listening, I think my head might explode. So that's why I'm here. Glad you like it. Here's the thing. What in the hell has happened to us? This society. I mean, maybe that whole, like, brave, tough guy thing was always just a total myth. You know, my baseball team can kick your baseball team's ass and blow up firecrackers on July 4th and all this. I don't know. It all seems so misplaced. Because as I'm standing in the TSA line, I just remarked to the Americans standing in line next to me that, like, damn, what is this, East Germany or something? We call ourselves Americans, and look at us taking off our shoes. And, of course, what am I doing? I'm taking off my shoes. I got to get on a plane to New Hampshire. There's no government railway that can get me there, and they'd put me through the same rigmarole, right? This is what you got to do to fly across the country. And so I'm submitting to this whole thing, but at least I'm complaining out loud in the line and saying, what has happened to us that this is the way it is now and that we accept this? And what I got almost universally was people looking at me like, shh, you're going to get us in trouble. as they looked back at the floor and pretended they couldn't hear the loudmouth guy that was talking all loud. And then, you know, here's the report in the Washington Post today. No, yesterday. TSA screening more than just carry-on bags. Behavior detection officers covertly watch travelers' conduct. Well, message to the undercovers at Phoenix. You need the Phoenix airport there. You need practice with your whole covert thing because you weren't very covert. I was the guy in the antiwar.com shirt winking and pointing at you, remember? The lady says to me, "You seem nervous today, Mr. Horton." Nervous? Oh, I get it. You're trying to turn this into some kind of reasonably objective belief that maybe there's a problem. Let me clarify for you. No, this is contempt. I'm not nervous. You're trying to turn this into the kind of thing where you got the excuse to have these goons grab me and take me off to God knows where. No, I'm not nervous. I am mad because I am innocent. And how dare you trample over all my rights? And I'll be goddamned if you're going to do it without so much as me being rude as fuck to you. "Well, I don't know why you're giving me such a hard time. I'm not giving you a hard time," she says. Well, what do you mean you're not giving me a hard time? Look at what you're doing. You're pilfering through my bag that you already x-rayed. But you're doing it with a smile on your face? Well, I'm just doing my job, so it's not my fault. It is your fault. You could get honest work, but you choose to pilfer through my bag for a living. And every bit of that better be back in there when you're done. And I will go through TSA like a good little kindergartner like the rest of you. But I will curse them, and I will make sure people can hear it. And I don't know what else to say except how disappointed I am in this whole society that this is the way it goes. You know, I was reading Happy Birthday, Pat Tillman, from his brother Kevin the other day at Truth Dig. And he talked about Americans think supporting the troops means having the kindergartners, get out their crayons and say, "Oh, we love you, soldier," and send it to the soldiers in Afghanistan. "Oh, yeah, we really love that," he says. "Oh, what we really like, too, is when you lobby and you get together and form a parents group and work really hard to get a new, an additional bit of padding for the inside of our helmets. Yeah, because that really saves us when we're being blown up by an IED, thrown 50 feet in the air, with our skin left behind in the aluminum Humvee melted to the seat." And then he says, "How can this be?" And this is from 2006. They're rerunning it at truthdig.org. And Kevin Tillman, brother of first the pro-war movement and now the anti-war movement's martyr, Pat Tillman. Yeah, right, like there's an anti-war movement. His brother, Kevin, writes, first of all, his quite clear contempt for all this pseudo-troop support that the American people engage in with their little bumper stickers and all their nonsense. But then he goes on to say, "And here we know they lied us into war. And here we know that they are torturing people. And we know that torturing people is a felony. And here we know that our neighbor's kid is getting his skin melted to the seat of his aluminum death trap Humvee that you sent him off to fight in. And as a result, we get what? Crickets. Nothing. We get the American people don't even give a shit. Don't even know they're supposed to." And back to the Fort Hood shooting. If those people had died in Afghanistan, no one would care. If you take these American soldiers, Barack Obama actually even said it. If these guys died in Afghanistan, well, that would be sad. But the fact that they died at Fort Hood makes it horrific. What? You take an American soldier, your idol, our best, our brightest, our bravest, who sacrifice everything for our freedom, who we love more than life itself, more than cops even, And then you take that soldier and you put him on the other side of salt water. And now it's okay if a fucking hydrogen bomb lands on his head? Now all of a sudden his life is worth less than that of a Pashtun? This society is sick, man. And I think that most of the sickness is just based on ignorance. People have no idea what we've given up here. They have no idea of the opportunity costs of the seen and the unseen, wealth destroyed, lives destroyed by this empire. You know, we were having a discussion when I was up at the University of New Hampshire hanging out with the Young Americans for Liberty. Hey, man, let me tell you something. If you're a young kid and you're listening to this, look into the Young Americans for Liberty. That's the Ron Paulians on the college campuses, but you don't have to be a college student. And I urge you to look them up. They are the leaders of the anti-war movement. Now, if there's any YALers in the audience listening today, you need to know it's all on you now. You have to attack the right from the right and the left from the left, kids, so get to work. But anyway, so I'm up there hanging out with the YAL kids who were so gracious as to have me as a guest speaker at their university last Friday. And we were talking a little bit about the Civil War and secession and this and that. And maybe I'm even wrong about this, but I says to the kids, I says, well, you know, a big part of this, too, was Uncle Tom's Cabin. Harriet Beecher Stowe put out this book. Later, Abraham Lincoln, who actually bore the responsibility for the invasion of the South, put it on her, and perhaps it was a bit hyperbolic, but he said to her, you're the woman who caused this war. You know, like, nice to meet you. That was his greeting to her when he met her. Greetings and salutations. You're the one who did this. And that was because the book Uncle Tom's Cabin clearly portrays, in no uncertain terms, white people who are clearly, whose lives are clearly worth much less than the black people that they oppress and enslave and torture to death. The black people are more moral, more Christian, better people than the sick bastard white people. And that book was so widely read across what was then American society. It really changed the world. It changed this country. And what happened was the morality, the perverse morality portrayed in that book smacked right up against people's belief in Jesus mostly and their basic sense of Christian decency and justice as they would have defined it at the time, virtually unanimously. And it caused a lot of people to just throw up their hands and say, no way, man, this has got to stop. Whatever, however it works out, something has got to end this. But you know what? Could a book change American society now? If Kevin Tillman wrote a book about, here, you dumb, fat, stupid, selfish, lazy Americans, this is the truth. This is how bad it really hurts. Would it even matter? If someone wrote Uncle Ahmed's Cabin, where the soldiers came in and burned everyone alive and raped their 14-year-old daughter, would the American people even give a shit? Would we insist maybe next time on any given day, at the longest point, 2 years away, the next congressional election, that the one there now will be replaced by the guy who swears by his mother's grave and his own soul that he is going to goddamn end these wars now? What does it take? I mean, I know that Lockheed gets to pick your congressman and whatever, but you can bum rush the primary. There's still enough little d democratic system left in this society where if you insist on having it your way, you can. But your way is buy me a doctor. Your way is buy my clunker and a new fucking car. And end the war? I don't give a fuck about that so much anymore. Let their skin melt to the seat of their aluminum Humvee. Buy me a doctor. I want to be dependent. And the wars, yeah, that doesn't matter so much anymore. I'm pissed off because the same mentality that has you staring at your socks because you've taken off your shoes and being a good little first grader with some kind of tyrant teacher, silent in line, hoping that you don't get pulled, is the same mentality that has this empire still at war, destroying itself. And And how can that be in America? This is the place where everybody flees their crappy country to come here and be free. This is the place where everybody runs to when they're trying to get away. Where are we supposed to go? When we've given this all up, when our Bill of Rights is gone and we don't get anything even resembling it again for another however gigantic of a long period of time. I mean, why are we doing this? Back to Glenn Greenwald, and why you ought to read Glenn Greenwald every day. Glenn Greenwald is quoting these judges. He's a lawyer. He knows what the hell he's talking about. And he's quoting these judges saying, hey, listen, if the government tortures people, we're not really ones to step in there because that's a national security matter. What? No. And of course, in America, there's enough judicial precedent that says exactly the opposite. There's enough law that says, oh, wrong. And of course, Glenn makes reference to all that, but then he says, you see what's going on here. This is what happens to a state at perpetual war. This is what happens when you're a world empire. Well, shit, we might have to torture someone to death in order to, you know, keep this thing together. And so you have federal appeals court judges who you would have thought have the biggest super egos in the whole world, or the biggest ids is what I mean. The most selfish, most ambitious, power-hungry people. And they won't exercise their own simple check and balance. No, you may not torture people. In this case, the innocent Canadian citizen, Mar Arar, who was sent to Syria, you know, those devils, by the CIA to be tortured for 18 months. You read all about it at salon.com/opinion/Greenwald right now. And this is what happens when you have an empire, is your rule of law falls away. Your judges won't even stop your executives from torturing people to death. So anyway, not like you give a shit, right? Who cares? I'm going to play some music. I'm done. I know you're done. You're done before I started. So you're still done now.